Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I'm sorry if I sound a bit different right now. I, again, am now using my travel microphone. I got the wire that I needed last time, and, well, I hope that this whole thing finds you well. Well, for one, I have now seen things with my own eyes. I got to the border itself, and it was weird, but first I have to say thank you, first and foremost, to the Pilecki Institute. They are Polish historians, and it's an institute that does research, and they have a team of people who are helping to deal with all this crisis, and one of them is Alina Nowobilska, and I want to say special thanks to her, because she was the person with whom I stayed in Warsaw, and that's helping me out throughout this trip, and I just wanted to say special thanks to her, and if you could just please follow her on Twitter, even though she has more followers than me, because she's a really great historian, specializes in Auschwitz, by the way, in Poles in Auschwitz. And she has her own show, Hack History, and you should totally check that one out too, I think. But with the news, I wish I would have something nice to you, I do have one thing though. In the episode zero, I mentioned that I had a talk with Dan Carlin just before all this mess started, and Dan Carlin released a new Common Sense episode, out of all things, which he doesn't do in a long time, and although apparently he also didn't record that conversation, do listen to it, and if you hear messages about friends from next to Russia, then he's talking about me there. So if you want to figure, and a lot of themes and a lot of subjects that we spoke about and discussed are in this episode. So hey, well, another time to recommend that show, but it was really a deep analysis and a bit more sane time when I was still just doing longer stuff. And turns out another thing that happened was that as I was moving here, there's the city, town, I suppose, by Polish standards, city by Latvian standards, next to the border called Chelm. Chelm. Yeah, the problem is there's another city in Poland called Chełmno. It's like that, except M-O is added at the end, and I made a mistake, and that's 130 euros that booking.com won't pay me back. So when I arrived here, I had to look for new hotels and change arrangement plans because I just hadn't noticed and it was too late to change. And I just posted on Twitter because you all have been super helpful and I wouldn't be here without you, without your support. But I posted about this on Twitter and I was amazed that, like, in an extremely short amount of time, you guys just pinched in and I didn't lose any money, and it was amazing. Thank you all. It all matters now, and I hope that that we all can make our lives better this way. Maybe. There were, of course, a lot of bad stuff happening today as well. Kharkov is just bombed terribly. Mariupol is also bombed terribly. And there's a theory that Russia has been changing their tactics from basically their blitzkrieg idea to kind of a new form of waging war, which is basically some sort of more traditional one. I read an article about this on I don't remember which media. I'm sorry, these episodes being made daily are taking a toll on me, and I have to write for Latvian media as well. So I think I'm going to write that article for Latvian media tomorrow, because right now I'm just getting too tired. But the bombing is increasing, and they are, as I heard, kind of compensating for the lack of the quality of their troops on assault with just insane amounts of firepower. They have decided that this won't be a swift occupation, and if they're going to take it seriously, they could just level everything to the ground with bombs and rockets. And this is a war of attrition that Ukraine probably will lose if nothing really changes in morale in Russia inside itself, but the sanctions are hitting them really hard. So let's hope for that. But I think that Ukraine's early successes, unfortunately, might have been caused by the fact that Russia picked a strategy in general that they are not well, not very used to, seriously. But about Russian morale, really. Harder and harder to get real actual information from them since a lot of journalists are afraid for the of their lives, and Dozhd, one of the TV channels that I watch, a lot of them have actually tried to move away. Russians who have more liberal views and who don't support this war and who feel like there's no future inside of Russia, they're moving through Belarus and mostly Armenia. So that's being helpful. And there's a massive protest going on inside St. Petersburg right now. Like, really a massive one. And I think we're seeing more and more of that, because the anti-war protests, the pictures I've seen were huge. And one thing that they did is, in Russia, all the Putin fanatics have gone crazy, that today, in that protest, the police detained a survivor of the Siege of Leningrad. I think I'll make a separate episode about the Siege of Leningrad. It's one of the more tragic episodes of the whole World War II. It's about how people went completely starving and everything, and she survived that, and they're very much respected in Russia, so, hey, that might be something. On the morale side also, funny enough, Russian convoy, which was supposed to provide fuel for the troops, itself ran out of fuel. And then Bayraktar drones did their work, because Bayraktar drones have been proven extremely effective against Russia when Ukraine uses them, and I think that's kind of a thing that, Turkey will kind of use in their own PR, because they will be able to sell them better. We also found out that Ukraine seized some documents from some Marines, and they published them. So apparently these leaked documents from Russian troops show that war against Ukraine was approved as early as 18th of January. And the initial plan was to seize Ukraine in 15 days, starting from the 20th of February to 6th of March. Which also just proves again the theory that, yes, all the leaks that we had from Pentagon and all from all the secret services of the United States, that they were truthful, that they really meant something. So that's an important thing to remember. And that's a really crazy thing. But again, about the morale, well, for one, a Russian businessman who lives in Israel has now offered a 1 million bounty on Putin. And I listened to kind of Nevzorov's commentary on this whole matter, because again, there was quite a lot to absorb, and there's a lot to absorb these days. And Alexander Nevzorov, the person that is among the most respected journalists in Russia today, he personally considers that Putin has only two ways out of this. One is just dying, and two, starting a nuclear war and just going somewhere else. Because he reminded me of a very important fact that I haven't mentioned in these episodes, and I highly doubt that I've mentioned that in the past year about Putin, but that's a thing that we all know here. If you remember what happened with Kursk, the submarine that sunk, Putin just smiled and stated, well, it sank, when asked what happened to it. Putin has not admitted defeat or the fact that he's failed at anything at all during his reign, that I highly doubt that he'll do it this time. Meanwhile, life in Russia itself is deteriorating super, super quickly, and a lot of people are packing up and leaving the country, those who can. Their cards are being blocked, and there's huge lines at the ATMs. And there are massive, massive rumors that borders will close soon, and there's a sense of panic inside of Russia as well. So, I don't know. I highly doubt that any individual sanction will force Russians to really change something. However, in total, there's some sort of awakening maybe happening in the Russian nation. And I think it may be a good thing. Because, again, and I repeat this, this is Putin's war. And Russians themselves, they've been victims of Putin for many, many years, and a lot of them don't want this war. And those who maybe do, you know, they've been fed disinformation for all this time. Russia's censorship is pretty bad. So it's important to get the word out to them as well. Meanwhile, Putin's supporters are now posting videos about how they destroy all the iPhones and all that stuff. It's just a bit hilarious, really. And you know, it's kind of like those that one time, which I definitely mentioned on the show, and some sort of grannies who were super pro-Putin, well, they went out and burned fake dollars, and it was crazy. Another important fact is about the maps, because again, I continue posting on the Eastern Border Twitter. Please follow that, and also please spread the show out. I hope it reaches as many people as possible, because I've seen ridiculous amounts of half-truths and people who just post stuff that's not verified, or sometimes you have to post stuff that is in a level of rumors, but you know, you have to follow up on that at least afterwards and make it clear. But there's a lot of experts around these parts. And yeah, if I was maybe angry and venting on episode 4 right now, I just don't have the strength for that at all anymore. Think about the maps though. If you see maps which have like all the red on them with the Russian occupation, remember that the Russian army is moving by the roads, and a lot of the land that you see painted red is a land really not controlled by anyone. That's where the locals are fighting back, and that's where the Russians are moving. They control the roads, and they control where they are, and they attack cities, and they don't really succeed at holding the territory. They're not policing all that land that you see conquered. They're moving by the roads and doing things to the cities. Of course, there are heavy battles, and Russians are now having some success in Donetsk and Lugansk, but even there, there's civil resistance over there, which is just amazing. But yeah, I'm in Helm now, and I got myself a hotel where to stay, and contacted the local press and everything. And I wanted to just pull out as I arrived here. I just wanted to pull out my camera with me and start interviewing people, everything. But I have to give myself a bit of rest, because this is really, really tiring. You know, finally gonna have some sleep. But this was really a reality check. If Warsaw seemed like slightly more normal and going to the border, like in a controlled group, was one thing, then this is different. You know, and you're in this border town, super close to both Belarusian and Ukrainian borders, and it's full with refugees. And while I was at the reception, when I finally found a place to stay, and yeah, I had to take a number that was designed to be some sort of luxurious number for families. And I only got it because some of the hotels here have just, you know, they've left like extremely few numbers, like few rooms open, since everywhere, like, it's full with refugees, insanely full with refugees. And yeah, it took me a bit of, shall we say, if you remember how I called the funds that I'm collecting for this trip, if you remember the first part of that saying, because I don't know, I don't want to speak too loud, but it took a bit of a not exactly legal means to get this, because if you look at Booking.com at Helm, it's all closed. But you know, they had a number which was kind of unsaved. I paid quite a lot for this, but it's worth it. And yeah, I'm definitely gonna help the locals, because while I was at the reception and dealing with all this mess, just so I can report to you, a lady with kids came down and asked how and where can they get some food, as their cards don't work, because they had gotten Russian cards. Some of them had even like money in hand, and if they would have like, if they could access it, that would be nice. But they were told that they're just basically, the hotel is accepting, like they're accepting help from the locals, and locals are giving it to them, which is nice. And there's a lot of stuff. I think I'll see the refugee camp, but right now this is basically a refugee camp, just in a different form. People are scared and worried. And there was a dialogue in Polish that I really didn't understand, but I understand what she said in Russian, and it was just so weird, surreal. And I asked her if I can interview her later, and she said yes, but I haven't managed to find her. But I'll definitely be helping these people as much as I can, because, you know, it's one thing that when you speak about it from all the news and from Russian sources and everything, and when you see it in Warsaw, and even there, it's looking a bit surreal. But when you see something like that in person, then I have no words. I cried, and like I said, this is taking a toll on me. But I'll manage, because I do what I can, and I try to help as much as I can. Another interesting thing about about this is that there were news coming in, and it's in the Ukrainian YouTube channels, the ones that are in Ukrainian, which I take a lot of effort to actually translate because I speak Russian. I'm not fluent in Ukrainian, but I can understand it if I focus hard enough. So apparently there are news that Russia will spread some deepfakes, they're preparing deepfakes with Zelensky's surrender, which is not going to happen, but they're going to have talks tonight this evening. So I hope that they're pretty much safe. Meanwhile, there's a town in Ukraine called Energograd, which is an energy city, basically. Or there's the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. And there were a lot of people standing in the roads today, in lines, and just standing in front of everything that was happening there, in front of all the things. And apparently the Russian soldiers had opened fire on them, on these unarmed civilians, and also had thrown grenades at them. The video I saw was only a smoke grenade, but there are reports, and, you know, some things might happen. One thing that I was told that could be really, really useful to you guys is that to give you a sense of scale about things. Now, Kiev is about the size of Chicago, or Paris, if you're in Europe. That's about the size of Kiev. There's like 2.6 million people living there. I've been there, so I know. Kharkov is the size of Philadelphia. I can't vouch for that because I haven't been to Kharkov, but maybe that'll explain some things. And Mariupol is the size of Oakland. Apparently. I would say Mariupol is about the size of, I don't know, well, from places where I've been, Mariupol is, it's a touristy town, it's quite big, but maybe that helps for you. I only have the scale for Kiev being about the size of Paris, but yeah, maybe this helps you understand everything more. Also, I had an occasion where in Romania, a MiG-21 vanished from radar of the coast of Black Sea. And Sweden reported that there are Russian planes breaching NATO airspace. Well, Swedish airspace, not NATO. But there was a rumor that they could do that. They could make some provocations on non-NATO countries. However, well, about Romania, the kind of first reports I got about this was that this might be a snow-related incident. But however, if you think about it, you know, even if they blasted it by an accident or something, I highly doubt that right now NATO will admit that it's their plane and that Russia crushed them. Because that would basically start a nuclear war. That would escalate this even further. So I will just leave it as is until I have confirmation. But it is quite likely there was just snow. I hope it was, definitely, because we really don't need anything more out of this. One thing, though, is that I told you about all the heroic defenders of Ukraine, and one of them was Vitaly Shakun. He was 25, and to stop Russians from crossing a bridge, he decided to detonate the mines that they had placed on it manually, because it couldn't be done remotely. And he died, obviously. And I saw pictures today of his funeral, and they were carrying his casket, and everyone around them was just sitting on one knee, and yeah. There's something in Ukrainian defense that is excellent. And like I mentioned before, actually, I'm pretty cynical of the situation, and I don't believe that they can hold Kiev forever. And I believe that some cities will eventually fall. But it doesn't really change the fact that they're fighting as hard as they can, and that even if they lose some cities, I think that they could actually calcify on some border over there. Because, like I said, what's Putin gonna do? But yeah, I think I'll be going to sleep now. You'll get a bunch of interviews and everything, and yeah, you'll get a longer episode once I get to the refugee centers, because I want to interview people, and then I'll send it to Anita, and she'll edit it, and well, we'll put it on Patreon and press the little button there. But right now, just off to sleep. Have a great day, and as much as you can in these dark times. And yeah, please do share the show, and well, thank you for all the support. Don't forget to donate to Ukraine, and there's a many charities there, and like I said, we have links on them. До свидания, товарищ.